This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
To Her Vantage, and this is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. Where have all the interns gone? How can they gain valuable work experience now that this has happened? Jan Drew of the Global Student, or TGS, shares about her business and what measures they put in place for remote internships. Jan, before we begin, a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Thanks, Frieda. I've been here in Malaysia for almost 14 years. I came here to set up the University of Melbourne office, and when that role finished after 3 years, I set up the Global Student, which is a business that brings Australian and UK university students to mostly Malaysia, but some other parts of Southeast Asia for internships, study tours, and volunteer programs. And, of course, that all went pear-shaped in March.
Everything went pear-shaped for a lot of people in March. But even starting TGS, right, you know, what were you thinking? What was missing?
I had worked, as I said, I worked for Australian universities, and I've always been sort of a bit passionate about the student mobility space, which is what we call it, which is sending students abroad. And the Australian government, they had put out a white paper on, you know, wanting to improve Australia's engagement in Asia. And so we started getting more students, you know, taking their international experiences into Asia. But in 2014, I think it was, our former Foreign Minister, Julie Bishop, put funding into the new Colombo plan, which was really meant to up the ante and really send more students abroad. So for us here in staying here in Malaysia and doing that, we found that there was nobody sort of working in Southeast Asia. Most students were sort of tending to go to the US, Europe, you know, they tend to go those places because that's where universities traditionally have their relationships. So the gap in the market for us was that we were here, and Malaysia being so central to Southeast Asia, it was a really good spot to set up a business because we're able to, you know, move around the region quite quickly. But we found that Malaysia just made so much sense because it's cheap, it's close, and English is widely spoken. So in terms of offering internships, it's just a no-brainer. You know, it provides a lot of opportunity with not only, you know, Malaysian companies, but multinational companies and Australian companies. So it's sort of worked really well for us until this year.
Right. You know, and traditionally, you know, how many students on average do you have coming in a year?
We were doing about 350 students up until last year. We slowly grew. Next year is our 10-year anniversary. And, of course, we started in like 2011. I think our first program only had like 10 students in it. But we've slowly built up. And, last year was 350. This year we should have had close to 450.
Right.
And, of course...
Should have.
Yes.
Okay.
And we're getting a portion of them, but
right,
yeah.
Right. And you've got a very interesting model now. And what is the business model? So you obviously help in getting these students over, and, you know, there's a fee attached to that.
Yes.
Right. And so what happens when a student comes over from Australia? How long are they here for? What do they go through?
Okay. So we work mostly with universities who have, yeah, they have this funding, you know, so they have grants to assist the students to travel. So we offer a full service where we work with the students from when they decide to come. We set them up. We do all the admin of setting them up with a company here. We source the hosts here and do a matching service where hosts are able to, you know, Skype or Zoom with the student and you know, after they've had their CV and see if it's a good fit for them. We do pre-departure, we do orientation. So when they're coming in country, we do everything from before they come to when they leave, including accommodation. We provide all their accommodation. We look after them 24/7. We provide networking events such as with the Australian High Commission or the Malaysia-Australia Business Council or other professional organisations. Mm-hmm. And we also work with the hosts to help them, you know, if the hosts, you know, have got any issues with students, you know, like they're not turning up or something like that, which is very rare because students that put their hands up for these kinds of programs are really usually very high-achieving students. Mm-hmm. They do this because they see it's a really good way to, you know, get some employability skills and get something on their CV and something they can share in a job interview that says, I've done this, I've overcome these challenges, I've learnt this about, you know, a country in Southeast Asia, and they said that they see it as an investment in their future. Mm. So we don't tend to get, you know, students that are, you know, come here to play. You know, it's just they're very, very serious students usually. And once a company has had an Australian intern, they generally say, when are they coming again? When can I have more?
Okay.
And we do it individually, but we also have some group programs where they come and they work on short programs for 2 weeks, like a small consulting team. So that's another model. But we do everything so that the host, all the host has to do is host them. You know, there's no cost to the host. The students are paying us for the service that we provide.
Right. And there could be anything from first year to third year university students.
Also masters, some are postgrad.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And they would stay for how long?
It depends on the program. We say when they're coming in country, we say it has to be a minimum of 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And they usually stay up to 12 because they can come into the country. Australians can come in on a social visit pass without having to, you know, go through any visa issues. So that allows them, if they do 12 weeks, that fits within that social visit pass. And that's an agreement that the Australian government has with immigration to allow them to do that. Students that come from other countries, we have to get the host company has to get a professional visit pass or a social visit pass internship.
All right. And how many universities have you tied up with in Australia?
We're partners with about 15 at the moment. Mm-hmm. We've picked up three new ones in the last 6 months, which is quite interesting. And I think that's partly because we've moved to the new model that people have seen there's an opportunity. So we've actually, that part of it has grown a little bit. It's just converting them into you know, actual numbers now.
All right. And you work beyond Malaysia, right? You are also in several other countries?
Yes, we do also Thailand and Vietnam. We do volunteer programs in Cambodia, but of course not at the moment. Yeah. And we do a little bit of work in Singapore. We've actually got interest in internships in Singapore, but we've done study tours in the past that involve both Malaysia and Singapore. Like, you know, they do a week in each country.
Right. Okay. And, you know, and what industries do you cover?
Well, pretty much anything that you don't need, like, you know, we wouldn't do medicine, for instance, because that would need a, you know, that's a high level of supervision and you know, because they're working towards an accreditation, that's something that we probably wouldn't be able to broker. A university would need to do that directly. But now we do pretty much anything. Really popular at the moment is engineering and law.
Mm.
They're probably the two key ones that everybody's asking us about at the moment, which I'd sort of thought engineering might be a bit difficult, but the universities say, well, no, they're doing them domestically, and that a lot of engineering is actually, you know, on line, it's like a lot of technology is used, so they've got labs that they can use at the university, so it makes it fairly easy. Law, you know, there's a lot of reading and writing, so you don't necessarily have to be here. They would miss out, of course, if they're doing remote ones. They miss out on the, you know, going to court and things like that. But they don't always get to do that when they're here anyway. You know,
right.
Communications, very easy. You know, business. Everybody's got business.
Mm.
Another program that we've been running is Women in STEM. So we have a special program for women in the STEM industry, and we have some senior people in industry that do a weekly talk, you know, for those young women. So that's sort of like a little specialised program as well that we run with one of the universities and about to expand it to others.
Right. And during these internships, is it do you have a few intakes a year? I mean, we're talking life before March. You know, does it happen a few times a year, or, you know, are they fixed dates?
Well, we have two key times when students are likely to travel in country, and that is the mid-year break, which is June, July, or from November to February. So they're normally the keys. Of course, with the way things have changed, now they can come at any time. So we have two programs next year that are going to be running from March, because now they can, you know, since they're not actually coming in country, they can do it at any time. So there's actually a whole bunch of flexible models, you know, that come with the change in how we work.
Right.
But normally when they're coming in country, it's normally those two periods, and the lengths can be, the university might say it needs to be this length, or a host might say, I don't want them I need them longer, you know, so the host has we ask for expressions of interest, and there's no obligation that you all have to take anybody, you know, it's just we try and work out what fits, what matches. So that's where we do the work between the university and the host, which I think hosts appreciate that, because they don't want to have to be going backwards and forwards and you know, work out what goes on. So that's sort of the service that we provide them as well.
And you haven't had a problem getting hosts off late?
Oh, not for in country. It's never been an issue, you know. And as I said, most people, you know, people refer other people on and say, "Oh my God, I had these students. You know, you should get into this program." With remote, of course, that's become a little bit different. So we're actually working at the moment, trying to identify companies that would be keen to think of taking, you know, interns remotely. Of course, it's not something that people have thought about. You know, it's like, well, how does that work?
Right.
Well, it works the same way as working at home with your staff, if your staff working from home.
Right.
With remote, they probably need to be a little bit more structured, maybe more project-based. And once you sort of have a chat with people, they sort of think, oh, and the other benefit then is, oh, well, maybe I don't need to, you know, sort of be looking after them the whole time. I can sort of check in with them, you know, a couple of times a day. So that there's sort of less onerous, you know, in terms of managing them. So that seems to be attractive to some as well.
Right. And we could talk a little bit more about the remote global internships that you've introduced in just a moment. I'm here with Jan Drew of the Global Student, or TGS. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Bribe-free ministers? BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Enterprise. Good morning. I'm Frida Liu. I'm speaking to Jan Drew from the Global Student, or TGS. They help with internships with universities from Australia into Malaysia. They've had to change things a little bit around. We're now doing remote global internships, right? So how does that work, Jan?
Well, that's been... It's very similar. Works in a similar way to the in-country. You know, when we found out in March that we weren't able to have students travelling, you know, universities started to write to us and say, well, nobody's travelling. A couple wrote and said, could we do these virtually? And we thought, yeah, well, why not? Mm-hmm. So as a team, we sat down and sort of looked at every single aspect of our current internship model and worked out how we would offer it remotely. And we've been quite deliberate in calling them remote global internships as well. The language around these kind of experiences is usually virtual, but we felt that virtual sort of means, you know, sort of not real or, you know, not quite this, you know, simulated. And we wanted students to get the idea that this is a real working experience, regardless of where you are. It's actually a real working experience. When my daughter used to work for me from Australia, we never said she worked virtually. We always said she worked remotely from Australia.
Mm.
So we've been quite deliberate in that terminology, and it's really pleasing to see other people are now starting to use that as well. Mm. So the program, when we looked at every single facet, we looked at, you know, what do we need to change or adapt, and we had to redo all our materials, all our communications, all had to be changed to be offered online. And the biggest challenge, I guess, has been how do you put the cultural part in? You know, students take an internship overseas because they want that, you know, that engagement with the culture, that cultural experience. And I think, you know, sometimes universities, that's why, you know, they sort of hold back a little bit on these because they think, oh, what's the point if they can't get the cultural stuff? So we developed something called Kanali Malaysia, and that is a program that they do online that, you know, that they do part of it in Australia and they do part of it online. So part of it will be, you know, talk to a Malaysian student on your campus and interview them about these, you know, different topics, or go to a Malaysian restaurant and have a meal, or, you know, take away or cook something together, because, you know, the food is all important in Malaysia, so they need to know that before they get in with their hosts. And then we have like other things, like there's a series of quiz questions that are about the Australia-Malaysia relationship, and another part that is a little bit more sort of on the touristy side. So, and we ran that mid-year, and the students just loved it. So that part was, you know, we got really good feedback, so we think that we've sort of managed that a little bit. In terms of working with hosts, we found we've got to provide hosts with a little bit more structure and some tips about how to manage this, how to manage a student, you know, to be, you know, how to get their clarity around how you're going to communicate, how you might, you know, what are the, you know, we've got time differences, but not great time differences, you know, maximum of about three hours in Malaysia at the moment with daylight saving. So a 4 in Thailand. So it's not so difficult. Like if you were doing one in the US or other parts of Europe, you know, you're looking at like a 12-hour time difference in some places, which means there's not the opportunity to engage. So we see Malaysia as having another real advantage here in that you've still got 5 or 6 hours in the day for some really good engagement. And we talked to the hosts about not only, you know, talking about the work and things like that, but by, you know, assigning a buddy or a mentor, and also having, you know, having lunch together, having a virtual lunch, which with our students. And that was really cool. We did that with one of our students in June, where my staff all came online with, you know, leftovers or what they'd bought that day, and we had this whole conversation around the meals, and it just helps you, you know, helps them get an understanding of the importance of food to the culture and the crossover between, you know, the different kinds of food that we have, the different, you know, foods that according to different races. And
right.
it was a really wonderful thing, which I think really helped them gain a little bit more of an understanding. And then it takes that back into, you know, because you miss all, when you're not here, you miss the sort of photocopier, water cooler type conversations. But if you can provide them with the triggers that on both sides they're able to sort of have discussion points, they come out of it feeling like they've learned something about Malaysia, and the ones mid-year said, oh, you know, you've really, you know, whet my appetite. I really can't wait until I can travel and come and visit Malaysia. So, you know, hopefully some will, you know.
Right.
Probably some won't, but yeah.
Right. So with food for Malaysians, that's our unifying religion. I guess, like, you know, it still doesn't, I guess, it's not the same as how you would conventionally network and have face-to-face interactions, but I guess we're, you know, making the most of what we can and using props in a way to get the conversation going. And do you think you'll continue, even when situation improves, do you think you'll continue with remote global internships?
Yes, we will. Mm. Because when this happened, this is something that I'd been wanting to look at for a couple of years and really hadn't had the time. And there was a couple of universities in Australia that had sort of gone down this path, like using projects with an Australian university, a Malaysian and a US university where students worked in teams. And I said, well, actually, this actually better reflects the way that we work, you know, internationally. We all work like this, but we'd never really thought about it, I guess, that we, you know, we often work in remote global teams. So when this happened, it was sort of why I didn't panic. I just thought, well, let's just move to this. And why it's important is that in Australia, in 2014, 5% of all enrolled university students were going abroad doing some kind of a mobility experience. And they said it's because they can't afford it. So the government gave them this money, New Colombo Plan,
right.
And last year the figures were 25%. So all that money that has been thrown at it in the last few years, all it's done is create opportunities for another 20%.
Mm.
So what are the other 75%? What are they doing? You know, they're obviously, it's not money, it's fear, it's family, you know, family commitments, it may be disabilities. You know, I often say to people, I don't know how somebody who is blind or was in a wheelchair would be able to, you know, how would I get them around KL, you know, with the infrastructure not being as friendly, you know, or even Thailand. You know, you cannot, there's no way to get a wheelchair up onto the SkyTrain. There's only about three stations that, you know, have an elevator. They've all got escalators. So, you know, for us, we thought this is another opportunity. So universities are starting to understand that this actually provides, it's an access and equity issue, that remote internships actually provide opportunities to those students that can't or won't travel.
Mm.
So for us, this is something that will sit alongside our regular offerings, and we should be able to say, you know, be able to have companies that might do both, you know. I think I mentioned to you earlier one of our super hosts, we call him, Norden Abdullah from Glenray. He will take them, you know, standing up, bringing them here, doing them online, because he says it's quite flexible. And because that's the way his workplace works, even with his own staff, it's a very flexible way of working. You know, this is a great way to teach these students that, you know, not all businesses work in bricks and mortar, you know, structured offices anymore. And that, and of course, it's changed even more than it used to. So it's a perfect opportunity to get them to see, you know, this is what work looks like now. You know, it's not necessarily we all get in our cars and drive there. You know,
right.
We've proved that we don't need that. Just as universities have proved you don't need, you know, lecture theatres full of students anymore.
Right. And just before this, before the pandemic, were there conversations of Malaysian students going to Australia?
We started to have them.
Mm.
We had a couple of the private universities had approached us about going the other way. And it was, part of the difficulty was when we first started having the conversations was cost, of course, you know, the cost being a little bit different. But it's now something that we'd started to work with a municipality in Perth that actually physically wanted to attract them there because they were an area that doesn't have a university, down there. So it didn't actually have access to Asian students. So they wanted to try and internationalise their region by bringing in students. So that was one we started to look at. And the other thing is that there wasn't a visa, but now there is a visa that allows Malaysians or people from anywhere really to take an internship in Australia, and that's a more recent thing in the last 12 to 18 months. So that's a new opportunity now as well that we could be doing that. But there's no reason why we couldn't do it remotely as well, working through some of the professional organisations down there that might be keen in the same manner to internationalise their own workplaces, which is what companies here want. One of our major hosts, for engineering is Prasarana. And when we first started working with Prasarana a few years ago, they said to us, "Oh, this is fantastic, because bringing students here and offering and integrating students from Australian universities into our workplace is part of our internationalisation strategy." And I was so surprised that a company actually had an internationalisation strategy. But, that was the forward thinking, Natasha Sikulfi in those days, had this vision that, it's a way for companies to allow to provide this, provide access to native English speakers, to different ways of thinking, of different ways of getting work done. So it's a win-win for the student and the company as well.
Right. Just final few questions. What have you learned about yourself and your team during this period?
Oh, my God. My team are amazing. We're a very small team. There's four girls plus me, four ladies. And they just got so into this. They loved the fact that they were being part of something, of creating change and developing something new. And they've just been brilliant. And even now, we did the mid-year, and then we're coming up for the year-end stuff, and it's a bit slower now while we're waiting for the CVs to come in and things like that. And it is hard to remain motivated and front up each week and think, are we going to be able to keep going when many there's other third-party providers, which is what we're called in Australia and other places, and especially the large ones in the US have actually gone broke. And we're doing this, my competitors in Australia actually get support from the Australian government to keep their business is going. We don't get that at all. We've dropped down our days of working. I haven't drawn a salary for a while, but we're just keep working. It's just one foot in front of the other, just trying to make this happen all the time. And we've learned so much. I just even just little things like PowerPoint, how to do that better, and right up to really big things. But we've learned a lot about ourselves as well, I think, and how we're really tenacious and we just want to really make this happen.
All right. To the tenacious Jan Drew from the Global Student TGS, thanks for talking to us. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.